Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks. Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All righty, it's about 6 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. This is program 312 in the series. Lisa Wolf, my co-host.
I don't know how we've gotten that far, but we have.
I don't know. It's August 25th, and we have classic radio shows, all your favorite radio shows here every Saturday and Sunday, beginning at 11 p.m. And tonight, we have the story of Dr. Kildare. And that's for my mom and everyone else that loves the story of Dr. Kildare. And then we have The Bickersons with Donna Meachie and Francis Langford. And then A Great Detective Adventure of Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell. And it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride. So let's play the game, Cat's Pride, Crack the Quote. What is the movie, Lisa?
The movie is Born Identity. Did you see it?
Born Identity.
Yeah.
Good,
2002.
That's right. Yeah. I know it.
Good. I'm sure you'll get it right. You always do. Probably not. And the prize is 2 tickets to the Chicago premiere of Waste Watchers, the musical opening.
Waste Watchers. Okay.
It's opening September 13th at the Royal George Theater in Chicago.
All right. So call us at 312-981-7200. We'll take the fifth caller, 312-981-7200. Call now. Play the game live on the air with us. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
And we have Ronald on the phone. Hi, Ronald. Do we have you?
Hang on a second.
Wait.
Yeah, he should be
there.
Here
he is. Hey, he is. We can hear you now. How are you?
Great.
So, I'm great. I'm glad you made it through. Glad to talk to you. We're going to play a little Crack the Quote. You're going to win a few tickets either way. So it's a great game. You ready to go?
We'll give it a shot.
All right. Sounds good. Born Identity is the movie. Carl, here we go.
Mm-hmm.
Quote number one, you were shot. See, there are the bullets. Number two, my life is anticipation like a stray bullet. Number three, what about the unfired bullets?
Number three.
What about the unfired bullets? Carl, you like that one or you like something better?
I'm going to go with number one.
Number one, you were shot. See, there are the bullets?
I think.
Okay, let's hear it.
You were shot. See, there are the bullets.
Ronald actually got one. Well, this is a big day, but Ronald, you know what? It doesn't matter. We're going to give you some great tickets to see Waste Watchers, the musical. It is the premiere here in Chicago, opening September 13th at the Royal George Theater.
Is this a belly dance, since we're waste watching?
I don't think it's a belly dance. I haven't seen it yet, but Royal George Theater does some great stuff. It's a musical. It's set in a gym, and it's a funny and lighthearted look for women. They talk about food and diet and exercise and friendship. It sounds like a lot of fun. You can check it out at wastewatchersthemusical.com, or you can give Royal George Box Office a call at 312-988-9000. But congratulations, Ron. I hope you love the show.
Well, that's fantastic. My wife's going to go crazy about
that. Yes, she is. I'm so glad. Let us know what you think, okay?
And the show is great. Thank you.
Oh,
thanks,
good.
Ron.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks, and have fun at the show. Very good, Lisa Wolf. All right, before we get into the story of Dr. Kildare, I want to remind all of our listeners that we do have a text in line. That number is 312-981-7200. And, folks, you will be doing me and Dan Long, our producer tonight. Dan, the great
what
Dan
year is
Long.
It?
Yeah, we started with Dan Long. Dan was our first producer here.
You know, Stephanie sent me a text to let me know it was you, and I'm like, oh my gosh, a blast from the past.
Wow.
And just so you know, when we were talking about it in the car, he almost called you Dan Wolf, but Dan Long it will be.
Yeah, that happened for a while.
Dan
he's back to
Long
that.
Is here. And you know what? You will do Dan and I a big favor, folks, if you text in to us, because it keeps Lisa up. She doesn't fall asleep. And
now that
she
we have some new couches in the newsroom, it would be much easier to fall asleep.
She was already telling me, look, look at this couch. I could fall asleep here. I could fall asleep over here.
You know, I think you're projecting your own feelings onto me. I'm just saying. And also, so excited about the Bickersons tonight. It's been a big draw. Everybody's excited about it, as am I. So we can look forward to that in hour two.
My mom, when she was a little kid, and her brothers, they used to play the game Dr. Kildare together, because they listened to Dr. Kildare on the radio. They'd run around, Dr. Kildare, and she'd be a nurse, and her brothers were the Dr. Kildare. And
see, now she should have been Dr. Kildare.
Gillespie.
Your brother should have been
a
nurse.
They may have taken turns, I'm
just
sure.
Saying.
And so this is one of her favorite radio shows, this and Life with Luigi.
Oh, I knew
two
that
favorite
one.
Shows.
Well, I hope she's listening.
So this is for my mom and also everyone else out there in radio land. This series came to radio in 1949. You know, there was a series of movies that MGM produced, starring Lou Ayres and Lionel Barrymore. They were, you know, Lou Ayres played Dr. Kildare, and Lionel Barrymore played the kind of crotchety Dr. Gillespie, you know, and he was the old guy on the team, on the hospital team. And then there was this hot shot new surgeon in Dr. Kildare. And they got along, but, you know, it was an interesting combination, the two of them, and then all of the cases, and they sometimes disagreed about the cases and things. And usually Dr. Kildare, the hot shot doctor, knew what he was doing, and he came through for, you know, he was the hero of the show. That's kind of what it was all about. And they worked at this big hospital. And so 1949, MGM was so happy with the success of the movies that they got the two main actors to the microphones. They lured them to the microphones, and they recorded a bunch of radio shows, like 50-something episodes, and it was syndicated by MGM Syndication. We have an episode for you now from March 15th, 1950. This is called The Vernon Pendleton Case. This stars Lou Ayres and Lionel Barrymore. Here's part one now of the story of Dr. Kildare.
The story of Dr. Kildare.
Whatsoever house I enter, there will I go for the benefit of the sick. And whatsoever things I see or hear concerning the life of men, I will keep silence thereon, counting such things to be held as sacred trusts. I will exercise my art solely for the cure of my
The story of Dr. Kildare, starring Lou Ayres and Lionel Barrymore. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer brought you those famous motion pictures. Now this exciting, heartwarming series is heard on radio. Now the story of Dr. Kildare, starring Lou Ayres as Dr. Kildare and Lionel Barrymore as Dr. Gillespie.
Blair General Hospital, one of the great citadels of American medicine. A clump of gray-white buildings planted deep in the heart of New York. Nerve center of medical progress. Where great minds and skilled hands wage man's everlasting battle against death and disease. Blair General Hospital. Where life begins, where life ends, where life goes on.
What are you looking at, Jimmy? You haven't moved from that window for 15 minutes.
Just looking at the people down there in the street.
Hmm.
Wondering how many of them are alive because some doctor somewhere went through medical school and was there to help when they needed it. Wondering how many of them will have years added to their lives because of some doctor they haven't met yet. How many need a doctor at this moment and don't know it. Won't know it until it's too late. I wish it were possible to stand up here and establish some sort of contact with the man in the street.
Why don't you just go down and set up a stall on the corner and examine every man that goes by?
You're not in very good humor today, are you? What's the matter? Liver acting up again?
You mind your own liver.
Your color's bad.
My color's excellent. You're seeing spots in front of your eyes from staring out of that window.
If I could save one man's life out of each 1,000 that walks by down there, it'd be worth examining the 1,000.
Jimmy, if you don't have enough work to do around here, I can easily...
Well, I have plenty to do, and I'm leaving to do it right now. Goodbye, Dr. Gillespie. Nice to have seen you. See you around.
Yeah.
Oh, and you better take something for that liver.
Get out of here! That boy's getting too smart for his britches. Get out of here and leave my liver alone.
Well, I'm terribly sorry. I didn't realize you wanted to be alone with your liver.
What did you barge in here for, Miss Nosy?
I am only in here because Dr. Carew phoned down and asked me to tell you that he was on his way down with Mr. Pendleton.
Pendleton? Vernon Pendleton?
That's what I said.
The Vernon Pendleton that's on the board of directors of this hospital?
Do you know of any other Mr. Vernon Pendleton that Dr. Carew would consider of sufficient importance to personally escort down to your office?
It isn't fair. It isn't fair that I should get Pendleton again this year. I got him last year.
Well, I'm sure Dr. Carew wants him to have the very best attention. After all, Mr. Pendleton donates a good deal of money to this hospital every year.
Spare me the gruesome details. Vernon Pendleton. The only thing wrong with that man is that he's in the last stages of being a hypochondriac. Come in!
Dr. Gillespie, here you are. You remember Mr. Pendleton, don't you?
Oh, yes, yes, of course. How are you, Mr. Pendleton?
Poorly, Dr. Gillespie, poorly.
Oh, no?
Yes.
Well, where do you feel poorly this time, Mr. Pendleton?
Well, I'll tell you, Dr. Gillespie.
If you two gentlemen will excuse me.
Dr. Carew, just a moment, if you don't mind.
Yes.
Mr. Pendleton, is it your stomach again?
It was my stomach, my back, my arms, my legs, my head,
Exactly. Just as I thought, Mr. Pendleton. Evidently, I wasn't able to help you too much last year.
Oh, I wouldn't say that, Dr. Gillespie. For a time, I may have improved.
No. I wasn't able to help you, or you wouldn't be back among us so soon. Now, Dr. Carew will tell you we have a specialist on our staff much better equipped to handle your type of case.
Oh, not better than you, Dr. Gillespie.
Dr. Gillespie is just being modest.
Well, now, your type of illness takes a very modern approach.
Oh.
And I can't think of anyone better equipped to handle someone who was having trouble with his stomach, back, arms, legs, and head than Dr. Kildare.
Kildare?
Mm. Now,
His office is right down the hall. Dr. Carew will show you the way. I'm sure you'll find him more than satisfactory. Much as I regret losing you as a patient, I sincerely feel that Kildare is your man.
Well, let's talk to Kildare, Carew.
Very well, Mr. Pendleton. Of course, I don't know if he's in his office.
He is.
Oh.
Then let's see him. Nice to have seen you, Dr. Gillespie.
Glad to have seen you, Mr. Pendleton.
That was not very nice of you, Dr. Gillespie. After all, Dr. Kildare doesn't know about Mr. Pendleton.
I am a dirty dog. A dirty dog.
Mr. Pendleton, what seems to be the trouble?
I don't know. That's what I expect you to tell me, Dr. Kildare.
That's fair enough. And tell me how you've been feeling.
Well, I've been feeling just terribly, Dr. Kildare, simply terribly. My stomach hasn't been right, and I've had terrible headaches and trouble with my back, and I've had a shooting pain that comes and goes in my left elbow, and my eyes have been bothering me, and nothing I take for these things does a bit of good.
You've been taking things?
Oh, my stars, yes. I have a pill for my liver, a pill for my gallbladder, 2 pills for my headaches, 3 pills for my back, 1 pill for my eyes, 1 pill for the shooting pain in my elbow, a half a dozen pills to help my general overall condition. And then, of course, I take practically every kind of vitamin on the market.
Mm-hmm. See. Very well, Mr. Pendleton. If you'll step into the next room and disrobe, I'd like to examine you.
Oh, whatever you say, Doctor.
Come in.
Oh, sorry. Are you attempting to establish contact with the man in the street again?
I see you haven't done anything about that liver.
Leave my liver alone. A man's entitled to some privacy.
You're really in rare form today, Doctor.
Well, I trust you're the same. How are you coming on with Mr. Pendleton?
I thought you were supposed to take care of the board of directors.
Well, I thought it was only fair to give you a crack at some of them, too. One for all and all for one, you know.
I don't like the expression on your face.
I'll quit harping on my liver.
This is not your liver, it's your attitude. There's something that's not quite kosher about all this.
Dr. Kildare, you have an ugly, suspicious mind.
Yes? Well, I didn't have before I met you.
I'm ready, Doctor.
Your patient seems to be calling you, Doctor.
Thank you, Dr. Gillespie. My hearing is not impaired.
Yes.
Oh, and thank you for recommending the patient to me, Dr. Gillespie.
The pleasure was all mine, Dr. Kildare. The pleasure was all mine.
Good morning, Mr. Pendleton.
Oh.
Well, you're early for your appointment.
Well, Doctor, I don't mind telling you I had a frightful night last night. Just frightful.
Really? Why was that?
Well, I was so concerned about what news you'd have for me today. I want to tell you, when a man gets to be my age, things like this are very hard to face.
Well, Mr. Pendleton, I have very good news for you.
You have?
I certainly have. There's nothing wrong with you.
There's no... Would you mind repeating that, Dr. Kildare?
I said there's nothing wrong with you.
But that's not true. That's not true. My head, my stomach, my back, my legs, my elbow.
I've given you a complete and most thorough examination, and you're in fine physical shape, Mr. Pendleton.
I don't believe it. You're wrong. You've got to be wrong. I know how I feel. How could I feel like this if nothing was wrong with me? I want a more thorough examination.
Mr. Pendleton, sometimes people magnify and imagine things until they think they're sick. When there's really nothing of any serious nature wrong with them at all.
Oh, and they told me you were a good doctor. They said you were better than Gillespie. Why, you couldn't carry Gillespie's hypodermic needle.
That's quite true, Mr. Pendleton. Dr. Gillespie is one of the great men of medicine in this country. The rest of us, at best in his presence, can merely be students.
Dr. Gillespie was always able to find something wrong with me.
Oh, then undoubtedly he also cured you of whatever was wrong with you. Now, you're in fine shape.
Oh.
Just forget about yourself. Take a few days' rest if you can, and you'll be feeling fit as a fiddle.
Well, I'm not going to take this lying down, you know. I'm going to Dr. Carew. We'll mighty soon see what he thinks about this report of yours. You told me he was a good doctor.
Well, he is a good doctor.
Well, he told me there was nothing wrong with me. He stood right in front of me and looked into these eyes, these poor bloodshot eyes, these eyes that have suffered through endless nights. Just look at them.
My, my.
Well, what kind of doctors are you employing in this hospital?
Oh, the best. The very best.
Well, you may think they're the best, but I don't think much of them. If this is the kind of medical men my money is paying for, I'm going to take my support to some other hospital.
No, don't do that. Don't be hasty, Mr. Pendleton. There must be some mistake. Yes, some mistake. I'll get to the bottom of it. Have no fear about that. I'll get to the bottom of it.
Nothing wrong with me, indeed. I'm a sick man, mighty sick. Anyone can look at me and know that I'm a sick man. I can look at myself and know that I'm a sick man, and I'm not even a doctor.
Of course you're a sick man. Now you go home and rest, Mr. Pendleton, and I'll look into this matter. I'll give it my personal attention, Mr. Pendleton. Kildare, I tell you, you've got to find something wrong with Vernon Pendleton.
But there isn't anything wrong with him, Dr. Carew. I've examined him from head right down to his little tootsies, and believe me, you'll go a long way before you find a healthier specimen.
Oh. Kildare, you've heard of school spirit, haven't you?
Hmm?
They must have had it at your school.
School spirit? What's that got to do with Vernon Pendleton?
Sometimes things are done for the good of the team, for the good of the school. It's the old show must go on spirit, you know. You see what I'm driving at, don't you?
Not so far.
Oh. Sometimes we have to shut our eyes to certain things for the good of the hospital. Sometimes we have to tell people what they want to hear for the good of the hospital. And it isn't always wrong, Kildare. Sometimes the things that people want to hear turn out to be the things that do them the most good.
Well, I'm not going to tell a man he's sick when he isn't.
No, of course not. But Mr. Pendleton has a big body. There must be something wrong with it someplace. Dr. Kildare, as head of this hospital, I must point out to you that Mr. Pendleton is a large contributor.
Dr. Carew, look at all those people down in the street. There's a multitude there that needs attention, and you insist that a doctor waste time trying to find something wrong with Vernon Pendleton.
Well, at least pretend to. Tell him you made a mistake or something new.
Very well, Dr. Carew. If you want to make a sick man out of Mr. Pendleton, all right, I'll play ball with you. I'll show you the old team spirit.
That's the idea, Kildare. Now you're cooking on a Bunsen burner.
Hello, Sally. Kildare speaking. Send out an ambulance to pick up Mr. Vernon Pendleton. And when he arrives at the hospital, I want him put into one of the isolation rooms.
Have the driver that brings him here wear a mask. And don't let anyone go in or out of his room without a mask. Got that? Thank you.
Well, now that sounded like action, Dr. Kildare.
Dr. Carew, I wasn't completely truthful when I said there was nothing wrong with Mr. Pendleton.
That's the kind of talk I like to hear.
There is something wrong, something terribly wrong. And I'm going to do my best to cure him of it.
Oh? What is it? What are you going to do?
I'm going to give Mr. Pendleton the special Kildare treatment for hypochondriacs.
We return to the story of Dr. Kildare in just a moment.
So I hate when they do my job like that, when the announcer on there comes in and says...
Know, some people can do jobs better than others, so...
But he had a much deeper voice than I did, so maybe that's why he's probably better than
he probably gets paid more.
And he was the... he said exactly what I was going to say. We'll return to the story of Dr. Kildare.
But you had to do it anyways, right?
It's my OCD.
I know.
It kicks in if I don't.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, David Jennings, and that's Bill Curtis there on our rejoin. This is the WGN Radio Theater, as I said earlier, every Saturday and Sunday night, starting at 11 p.m., Lisa and I and the whole gang here bring you the very best in classic radio. Boston Blackie, Jack Benny, The Shadow, Suspense, The Whistler, Inner Sanctum, Dragnet, Gunsmoke, you name it, we have it here, courtesy of Lisa Wolf.
Well,
she picks them all out.
I do.
I have 100,000 shows, and Lisa goes through them and says, eeny, meeny, miny, mo.
Well, the shows that everybody likes are the ones that I picked out, and the shows that everybody isn't so fond of, those are the ones that you added in.
So then did you pick all of these tonight?
Because tonight, I'm good with this whole lineup.
Yeah. Yeah. So
that's why it's such a star-studded lineup.
Absolutely. Well, you did a great job, Lisa. The story of Dr. Kildare is what we're listening to. Lou Ayres and Lionel Barrymore. You know, Lionel Barrymore is related in some way, and I'm sure our listeners know, to Drew Barrymore. I think it's like a great uncle or something like that.
It's kind of the same way that I am related to Nero Wolfe.
That is exactly
it's
right.
It's kind Only, of a, just a distant relative.
I think at Ellis Island, though, when you came through Ellis Island,
well,
they got rid of the E on the end of your name. That's the only problem with that.
Just to be clear, it wasn't my name at that time because I just married into my grandparents didn't come through
like
with that name.
I like the thought of you coming through Ellis Island.
Yeah, that didn't happen.
And that happens.
Born right here in Chicago.
But Lionel Barrymore, you know, will always be known as Ebenezer Scrooge. You know, he was really what everybody strives to be in, like, the Goodman Theater productions of...
And I was just going to say that we've got Larry Yanda, who has done that part
amazing.
For maybe 10 years here at Goodman Theater.
He's amazing. And, you know, I think everyone tries to channel a little Lionel Barrymore when they're playing that part. And it's really great to watch the movie with Lionel Barrymore. And then we have some radio broadcasts of Lionel Barrymore playing Ebenezer Scrooge. We'll do that around the holidays, so it'll be a lot of fun. But right now, let's get back to the story of Dr. Kildare.
Now we continue with the story of Dr. Kildare, starring Lou Ayres as Dr. Kildare and Lionel Barrymore as Dr. Gillespie.
Good morning, Mr. Pendleton. Did you have a good night's sleep?
No. Dr. Kildare, why am I shut up here like this? Why have you got a mask on? Why does everybody wear a mask when they come in here?
It's just a precautionary measure, Mr. Pendleton. Maybe quite unnecessary, but until we find out the nature of your illness, we can't be too careful. Now, let me have a look at this chart.
What are you taking a precautionary measure against, Dr. Kildare? What do you think I might have?
In the case of a mysterious malady such as yours, we can't tell without extensive tests. We have to keep you in isolation until we are positive that you are in no way contagious.
Contagious? Oh, dear me.
Ah, here's Nurse Parker with your breakfast.
Oh, breakfast.
Good morning, Mr. Pendleton. Now, let me crank up your bed.
Yes, you're having a lovely cup of weak tea without cream or sugar and a delicious piece of dry toast.
I don't like tea and dry toast.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Pendleton, but that's all you can have just now. It's part of our first test.
First test?
Yes. After a while, we're going to let you swallow a small, soft rubber tube.
I don't want to swallow a small, soft rubber tube.
Well, I know it isn't very pleasant, but it's part of the stomach test, Mr. Pendleton. You were complaining of pains in your stomach, you know.
Oh, well, I don't have them now.
Well, we want to find out why you've been having them.
Do I have to swallow a hose to have you find out?
Yes, I'm afraid you do. Because through that hose, we're going to remove part of your breakfast in an hour and test it.
My appetite's gone. I don't think I can eat a thing.
I'm afraid I have to insist, Mr. Pendleton. After all, you wanted a thorough examination. And I intend to be thorough.
Well, yes, I know. You can be thorough, and then you can be thorough. There's no use getting carried away with this thing.
Nurse, after he finishes eating, I want some blood specimens.
Oh, yes, Dr. Kildare.
I'll be back a little later, Mr. Pendleton. Hope you enjoy your breakfast.
Oh, breakfast. Nurse, this is the isolation wing, isn't it?
Yes, it is, Mr. Pendleton.
Oh, dear. I don't suppose many people leave these rooms alive.
Oh, yes. Several people have.
Nurse, would you mind phoning my house for me?
Not at all, Mr. Pendleton.
And tell whoever answers to get hold of my attorney and have him come down here.
Oh, your attorney? You want him to talk to Dr. Kildare about springing you?
No. I want him to be sure my will is in order.
Oh, you're not going to die, Mr. Pendleton.
I'm too... No one could swallow a rubber tube and live.
Now, it isn't that bad. No one's ever died from it yet. Of course, it isn't very comfortable. Really isn't much fun being sick, is it, Mr. Pendleton?
Oh, don't ever give me another rubber tube to swallow. Oh.
Now, Mr. Pendleton, Dr. Kildare wants you to drink this.
What is it?
It's a lovely glass of buttermilk with barium in it.
Oh, horrible.
After you drink it, Dr. Kildare is going to look at you behind the fluoroscopic X-ray screen.
Do you see anything?
I see peristaltic waves.
You see what?
Peristaltic waves.
Oh, is that serious?
That's the contractions of the stomach.
Oh, I feel worse than I did before I got in here.
It always gets worse before it gets better. I'm going to make a new man out of you, Mr. Pendleton.
Oh, I hope I live that long.
How's your patient in isolation, Dr. Kildare? Have you found anything startling?
Not so far.
It's absolute nonsense putting a man through all those tests.
He wanted a thorough examination. He even went to Carew and demanded a thorough examination. Well, he's getting one.
You've been giving him the works, huh?
Blood tests, ulcer tests, gallbladder tests.
I wish I could have been there to see some of them.
Well, if he was your patient, you could have been there. But you didn't want him as a patient, remember?
How's he taking it?
Like a man on the last lap of the last mile. He's had his attorneys down twice, making changes in his will.
Well, he's probably cutting the hospital out of it.
No, that's the funny part. He says this is the first efficient examination he's ever had. May not be enjoying it, but he feels it's efficient.
What's he getting next?
Well, now he's going to swallow the rubber tube with the metal perforated tip.
Oh, that is one of the most uncomfortable... I wouldn't have the heart to do that to any man that didn't really need it.
Well, how do you know he doesn't need it? You pass the rubber tube through the stomach to the duodenum where it remains. The duodenal juices are collected and...
Well, kindly spare me the classroom lecture, Dr. Kildare. I don't need any refresher course.
Well, then you know that this test will enable me to study the secretion of the pancreas, which plays an important part in Mr. Pendleton's digestion. And it's his stomach that he keeps complaining about.
You're going to do all these things, waste all these examinations on a healthy man.
I don't think they're going to be wasted, Dr. Gillespie. I hope through these examinations to bring Mr. Pendleton back to health. Care to come along and have a look at the patient?
I certainly would, Gordon.
Evening, Mr. Pendleton.
Oh, Dr. Kildare. Why, you're not wearing your mask. Dr. Gillespie.
Evening, Mr. Pendleton.
It isn't necessary to wear masks any longer.
Isn't necessary?
That's right. There's no longer any need for it.
Oh, you mean you've given me up for lost?
No, and I have no intention of giving you up for lost.
That's right, Doctor. Keep fighting until the last.
You will.
Mr. Pendleton, do you know what it's like outside?
No.
Now, there's a snap in the air, and when you walk, you want to put your head back and take deep breaths. The air's like November wine.
I've always liked this time of year. I have a small farm in Connecticut, and during the season I like to. I don't suppose I'll ever see it again.
You're going to see it before the week is over.
Alive or dead?
Very much alive. Mr. Pendleton, I've completed my examinations and tests. I know everything that a medical test can tell a doctor about a patient. I know what's wrong with you.
Is it curable?
It certainly is. Won't even be difficult to cure. If you exert a little self-control.
What is it? What is it, Dr. Kildare?
Mr. Pendleton, you are the victim of pills.
Of what?
Too many pills. The pills that you took for your elbow upset your stomach. The pills that you took for your stomach gave you those headaches. The pills that you took for your headaches upset your pancreas. In other words, you've been swallowing so much medicine that you've kept your whole system upset. Now, if you'll throw away the pills, you're going to be a new man. That's what I found out from all those tests.
No more pills.
No more pills.
Not even one pill?
No pills at all. Mr. Pendleton, I realize I'm depriving you of something.
Yes, you certainly are.
Ah, but he's giving you something in exchange, Mr. Pendleton. In exchange, he's giving you evenings to walk across that Connecticut countryside of yours. Days that you'll start out brisk and invigorated and eager to work. He's giving you nights when you'll sleep. He's giving you peace of mind. And in time, a whole brand new nervous system. Dr. Kildare's giving you back all the time you've been spending in worrying. To spend in enjoying life.
I know, Dr. Gillespie. Oh, Dr. Kildare, you've taken a great load off my heart. I thought these last few days, I thought I'd reached the end. Now, to know that I can leave here and go back to life. Dr. Kildare, you've given me a new lease on life.
I sincerely believe I have, Mr. Pendleton. I hope you'll obey my instructions.
Oh, you have my word, Dr. Kildare. I'll never take another pill unless you prescribe it.
Then, Mr. Pendleton, I pronounce you cured.
Me. If you're back establishing contact with the man in the street again, I wouldn't dream of bothering you.
Oh, no, come and look at them. That's the world down there, our world. You and I and all the other men of medicine in the universe are all that stands between them and death. There's our world to protect, to heal, to care for.
You know, Jimmy, you were right about Mr. Pendleton. He was sick. But somehow that never occurred to me.
Say, your liver must really be acting up. I think I'll take you downstairs and examine
you. No, keep away from me now. My liver's fine.
Couldn't be. This milk of human kindness comes from you only when your liver's getting very acute.
My liver's all right now. See, that's funny.
What's funny?
Well, I really did feel a little pain in that region just now, but...
Uh-huh.
Confound it, you're going to end up making a hypochondriac out of me. Come in!
Well, gentlemen, it's been a good day for the hospital. Kildare, you did a fine job, and I'm proud of you.
Thank you, Dr. Guru.
In fact, you did such a good job that from now on, we're going to send all the hypochondriac cases to you.
Oh, no.
That's a fine idea, Dr. Guru. A splendid idea. Because I never saw a man handle a hypochondriac better than Dr. Kildare. And speaking of hypochondriacs, Jimmy, maybe you better have a look at that liver of mine.
You have just heard the story of Dr. Kildare, starring Lou Ayres and Lionel Barrymore. Dr. Kildare is presented by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of Key to the City, starring Clark Gable, Loretta Young, Frank Morgan, and Marilyn Maxwell. This program was written by Gene Holloway and directed by William P. Russo. Original music was composed and conducted by Walter Schumann. Supporting cast included Virginia Gregg, Ted Osborne, and Joseph Kearns. Dick Joy speaking.
And that is the story of Dr. Kildare from March 15th, 1950, the Vernon Pendleton case with Lou Ayres and Lionel Barrymore. And you heard Joseph Kearns there as Vernon Pendleton. And, you know, Joseph Kearns was in a lot of radio shows, Lisa. He was also sort of a supporting character on the Jack Benny program for years. He played Ed the Vault Guard, you know, when Jack would go down in the vault to get some money. He had a live guard down there, and Joseph Kearns played that part. But Joseph Kearns was also Mr. Wilson on the Dennis the Menace radio, television show. He was the next-door neighbor for a while. Gail Gordon played that part, too. But on radio, one of the things you probably best remember Joseph Kearns as is in The Cinnamon Bear. He was the crazy quilt dragon on The Cinnamon Bear radio show. And we're probably not going to play The Cinnamon Bear this year because, unfortunately, it's so long. It's 26 quarter-hour chapters, although we do have a tremendous sound-quality version of The Cinnamon Bear at our website. People can order it. It's like 6.5 hours long, 26 chapters. It's a wonderful story, great Christmas story. People are always asking for it. We have it at classicradiostore.com. You can go there because we have the master recording of that, and we license that from Glanville Heisch, who was the creator, his granddaughter. So, yeah, we have The Cinnamon Bear, and Joseph Kearns played the crazy quilt dragon on there. Let's take a quick break, then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. We had quite a few text people talking about The Cinnamon Bear. That is a great series. I tell you what, I listen to it all the time. I mean, not generally when it's not Christmas time. I like to listen to it at Christmas time. But even though it's a radio series that was aimed at kids, I kind of am a kid at heart. I love The Cinnamon Bear. And I know a lot of adults that do love The Cinnamon Bear. I know you're not a huge fan, Lisa Wolf.
No, I'm not. You, sorry.
What is it about The Cinnamon Bear that you don't like?
I just think it's more childlike, which doesn't make it bad, but it's not what I would choose to listen to.
Do you like The Wizard of Oz?
I do, but I think that's not...
It's just like The Wizard of Oz.
I don't see it that way.
Really?
Really.
Do you like Alice in Wonderland?
I do.
Really? I don't.
Really?
No, I don't like that.
Yeah, well, you don't have to.
Alice in Wonderland is kind
of
like...
I like The Wizard of Oz more.
Wizard of Oz is great.
There's a difference between a family kind of a show, and I don't know if, to me, Cinnamon Bear just didn't... I know we played it on other show once, and I just didn't love it. I'm sorry.
Years ago, I watched a movie called Pritzi's Honor. Have you ever seen this movie with Jack Nicholson? And
you know, it's been so long.
Yeah,
I don't remember.
So I remember watching Pritzi's Honor and going, I don't like this movie. Right,
and then you revisit it,
and then I watched it again for some reason. I don't know. Somebody won a bet or something like that. I watched it again, and I was like, this movie's fantastic. Right?
All right.
I think
so
that's
what
would happen to you.
Really?
If you listen to this. I'm going to maybe
for 6.5 hours.
You know what?
I'm not sure you could force me to do it.
Hey, Dan, Lisa and I carpool. What I think I'm going to start doing, because it's, what, 40 minutes? Maybe in the car each way?
Maybe.
That would be like three episodes, two or three episodes.
I think I might have to start driving myself. Bear.
I think I'm going to play the Cinnamon Bear for you.
I think I'm going to stop carpooling with you.
Starting tomorrow, I can load it into my car because I can Bluetooth it.
Yeah, that you know how to do.
It's the craziest thing. I can't do anything technologically.
Right.
But for some strange reason, I'm able to Bluetooth stuff to my car.
I will tell you that you now have an app that you use regularly, and I will take credit for your first app on your phone, which is Spot Hero.
I didn't believe apps were real.
And I actually taught him how to do Spot Hero so that he can park here in the building.
The world was talking about apps, and I'm like, this is a big, giant conspiracy.
How much do you like your first app? How much do you love Spot Hero?
Spot Hero works.
There you go. Open your mind.
So maybe these are real, these things.
Maybe.
These app things.
They might be. So he's got one app on his phone now, and I take full credit for it.
Yeah.
So we'll continue in that trend.
Tomorrow you're going to listen to that chapter. You are going to listen to chapter one.
Tomorrow I'm actually driving myself.
One, two, and three of
my parents are coming to the studio tomorrow night, or tonight as the case may be, the first time here at 303, so I am going to drive myself, but I would have anyways.
Both Robert and Alice are coming?
Yes.
To the station?
Yes,
oh, that's
they're coming
great.
To visit
that's
us.
That's great. All right.
Oh, by the way.
Yes?
Someone had a question for you. That wound up in our email.
Uh-huh.
Someone said that Lionel Barrymore is famous for playing Scrooge.
Yeah.
The question from the listener is, doesn't he mean Mr. Potter in A Wonderful Life?
Yes, he did that also. But
is he famous for both roles?
He's famous. He did a lot of roles, but he was the greatest Scrooge of all time also. But yeah, he was Mr. Potter in It's a Wonderful Life also. But he did a ton of things. But he is...
I think we're getting to a Christmas trend here, and it's only August, so let's slow down here.
It's rushing things a little.
I know.
Well, there's nothing wrong with a little Christmas spirit.
It's I think I'm more Scrooge-like because I'm just not ready for
that
yet.
You are a Scrooge. You're a female Scrooge.
I'll take it because I'm not there yet.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
I've got this piano thing down, right?
You're an excellent pianist.
There we go. What kind of a piano is this? A Baby Grand?
It's a Baldwin.
It's a Baldwin Baby Grand?
I didn't say Baby Grand. I just said Baldwin. It's an upright.
Is it an Alec Baldwin?
It's an upright.
Or is it a Stephen Baldwin?
I'm going to go with Alec.
All right. So in this hour, we're going to play one of the most popular comedy shows of the golden age of radio. Very few episodes exist, though. They were on for several years, but only a handful of these episodes of the Bickersons exist. And they were on a show called Dream Time, which was named after the sponsor, Dream Shampoo. Dream Shampoo. That you use that, don't you?
That's what I use.
Yeah, that's why your hair is all greasy.
It's pretty shiny, I think.
Yeah, Dream makes your hair very greasy.
Shiny.
And anyway, so it was on the air for a while, but very few episodes.
And you know what I was going to say? While we are not married, this relationship is very similar to ours.
You're married.
No, while we are not married to each other, I find the relationship similar to that of the Bickersons.
Because you probably bicker more with me than you do your own husband.
We really don't.
Yeah, you and Dan
much.
Get along great.
Yeah, well, I'm easy to get along with.
Are you?
I am.
Really?
I think so.
Who told you that?
I did. Oh, I told myself
okay.
that.
That's good.
That's good.
I'm glad you think so.
Well, you can ask my parents when they're here tonight.
Actually, you are very easy to get along with.
I know.
You're
very good natured, I hear.
You're a lot of fun, too, Lisa.
Well, thanks, Carl. You're high maintenance.
Am I? I'm sorry.
I know.
I'll try to not be.
Okay, well, you keep working on that.
The Bickersons in this hour, Don Ameche and Frances Langford. A lot of interesting things about the Bickersons, but one of the interesting things, the show, the characters were created by Philip Rapp, who also had a hand in creating Baby Snooks and Daddy. And Philip Rapp did not choose comedians to play these roles. He chose kind of a dramatic actor, Don Ameche. Now, Don Ameche has done some comedy, especially in his later years. You know, he was in the movie Trading Places and things like that. But Don Ameche was not known as a comedian in any way, shape, or form during the 1940s. And either was Frances Langford. Frances Langford was a singer. She was a kind of a straight actress and singer. And he took these two people and made them two of the funniest people on radio. And that's because of the writing. The writing was incredible. Yeah. And he did most of the writing, Philip Rapp, just a genius of a writer and producer. And we're going to have an episode for you in just a minute. But first, we're going to play our game, Cat's Pride. Crack the quote. What is the movie?
The movie is Sin City from 2005. Oh, yeah. Did
good,
you see it?
Yes, good
I know you're
movie.
A Jessica Alba
that
fan.
That is, oh.
That's what I thought.
Oh, my gosh.
She's on the list, Carl?
It's such a great movie, such an amazing. If you have not seen Sin City, it's sort of almost like a cartoon, but you see the people, you know, it's really, it's a live action, but they've made it in such a way with the colors and things.
Yeah.
It's like a pulp magazine, pulp comic come to life.
And Bruce Willis is amazing.
Oh, it's such a great movie. All right, so what is the prize?
They're going to win two tickets to see the Chicago premiere of Waste Watchers, the musical, which is opening September 13th.
Dance.
At the Royal George.
It's a belly dance.
You're probably wrong.
312-9... I'm never wrong.
Yeah,
312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We'll take the third caller. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Call now. Play the game live on the air. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote. Brought to you by Cat's Pride.
And Lisa, you know what?
I like donuts.
You know what's in the middle of... Dan Long, do you know what's in the middle of a shebang donut?
Can't say I do.
The whole shebang.
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh, man, I want to hit my hand.
Have...
One second.
Here, I'll do it for you.
Oh, car man. Crash sound effect over
any,
there.
I don't have any sound effects.
Yeah, that's a better one. Good, we've got Kathy on the phone. Hi,
Kathy. I want to say hi to Kathy.
I wanted to say hi to Kathy, but I don't hear her.
Kathy.
Carl, fix
Dan's going to put her on.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys
good.
Doing?
So glad
Kathy,
you
know what's in the middle of a shebang donut?
I think I just heard.
The whole shebang.
You see, telling the joke only works once, maybe. Maybe. Never twice. Kathy, so glad you made it through. Caller number three, the movie is Sin City. Carl, you've got one right tonight, so you're on a big win streak
I am on
for
a
you.
Roll here. Like
let's
a donut.
See how it goes.
Donut can roll.
Or a streak. All right, let's go. Number one, there's something unspoken about the dark. Number two, I like the darkness, the unknown, the quiet, the cold. Number three, when I find out who did it, it won't be quick and quiet. Kathy, what sounds right?
I'm positive
right?
I know which one it is.
I'm sure you're right.
I'm positive.
Okay.
What do you think it is, Carl?
You want a lifeline?
Yeah.
Three.
You like number three?
Mm-hmm.
When I find out who did it, it won't be quick and quiet?
Yeah.
All right.
Sure.
Let's see what it is.
Find out who did it. It won't be quick and quiet.
And there you go. Nothing to it. Carl's a good lifeline tonight.
Yeah, I know both those movies. That's
normally
why.
Not so much. But terrific. You are a winner. You have won two tickets to the Chicago premiere of Waste Watchers, the musical. It opens.
It's a belly dance.
Yeah.
Would it be okay if maybe I substituted the desktop water thing, because I live in Eugene, Oregon.
I'm so sorry. I can't do that for you this time. This is a ticket night for the Royal George Theater.
Oh.
So maybe you can give them to somebody who would appreciate them.
In the Chicago area.
It's a great musical. It's right here, the Royal George Theater. They do great shows. It's set in a women's gym. It's funny. It's lighthearted. Check it out at Royal George box office. You can give them a call or go to wastewatchersthemusical.com.
It's a belly dance.
It's definitely not a belly dance, but hopefully you've got a friend or someone you know who would appreciate that in Chicago.
All right.
Take care.
Thanks, Kathy. All right. Well, we're two for two, Lisa Wolf.
Well, you are.
Two for two.
Well, normally you get zero or one, so this is very exciting. We still have one more to go tonight, so we'll hold off for hour three.
If I win all three of them.
You want to know the third movie in anticipation?
What is it?
Donnie Darko.
Oh, I never saw that
Oh,
movie.
Darn.
Yeah. Jake Gyllenhaal, right?
Oh, darn.
Pretty sure. All right, well, yeah. It is time for the Bickersons, and we talked about it a little bit. Yeah, Don Ameche, Francis Langford. And on this show, you're going to hear Danny Thomas, who showed up every once in a while as Blanche's ne'er-do-well brother, Amos. And a great show. They all go fishing on this program. April 20th, 1947 is heard on NBC. Here's part one of The Bickersons.
From Hollywood, it's Dream Time. Ladies and gentlemen, the makers of Dream Shampoo are pleased to present The Dream Show, produced by Carlton Alsop and starring Don Ameche.
Let me sleep. Will you please, Blanche?
Danny Thomas.
It's a free country. I'm a citizen.
And Francis Langford singing.
I know that you know that I'll go where you go. I choose you, won't lose you. I wish you knew how much I long to hold you in my arms. This time is my time. Will soon be goodbye time, and in the starlight, hold me tight. With one more little kiss, say 99. This time's my time, will soon be goodbye time, and in the starlight, hold me tight, with one more little kiss, say 99.
And here is your host for the evening, Don Ameche. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and good evening. Francis, I was really touched by the surprise party you gave me last night.
I enjoyed it more than you did, Don. Your picture, Alexander's Ragtime Band, is so delightful that when it was reissued, I thought it would be a cute idea to have a reunion of the original cast and our mutual friends.
Yeah, it would have been a perfect evening if Danny Thomas hadn't cut in every time you and I were dancing.
Well, that's permissible.
Well, it may be, but I hate to dance with a man. He always gets me into silly situations.
Oh, that's just his idea of a little joke. Actually, I think Danny is one of your most ardent admirers.
Well, that may be so, but...
Oh, hello, everybody.
Danny! Danny Thomas!
Don. Hey, Don, I just came back from Grauman's Chinese where they're showing Alexander's Ragtime Band, and boy, am I glad I went.
You are?
Oh, I sure am. The candy machine had Hershey bars.
Supposed to be a friend of mine, and you think a Hershey bar is more important than my picture.
Oh, not ordinarily, but these Hersheys had nuts in them.
You see, Francis, how he gets me into these silly conversations?
Oh, gee, Don, don't be angry. I'm just kidding. I'm exaggerating.
Yeah, that's it. You're always exaggerating.
I'm only human.
There you go, exaggerating again.
Oh, boys, you're always acting so antagonistic. Why don't you try saying nice things to each other?
It's okay with me, Francis. In fact, Don, you know I really like you. You're so brilliant. You're so meticulous. You're so talented. What am I?
You're so right.
You might say something nice about me, Don. You know, I'm in pictures too now, and it impresses plenty of people, especially women.
Mm.
Well, I can prove it to you. Just watch. Does any young lady in the audience care to come up and kiss me? Middle-aged lady like to come up and kiss me? Any old lady? Any old man? Must be fate. I just have no luck with women.
Danny, that doesn't prove a thing. There's a time and place for romance.
Ah, nothing works with me. I don't know.
That's negative thinking. Now, you just made a picture, The Unfinished Dance. Didn't you and Karen Booth do any scenes together?
Well, there was one scene when we were alone on the roof and I slipped my arm around her waist.
Then what did you do?
I guessed her weight.
You know, Danny, I hate to constantly criticize you, but I don't think you're the type to play a lover in pictures.
I'm not?
Don't let Don worry you, Danny. Where there's life, there's hope.
That's got me worried, too. Where there's hope, they don't need Thomas. On second thought, maybe I shouldn't be so pessimistic. You know, Don, I have an uncle who wanted to be an actor, and he took dramatic lessons for 10 years. And after all those years, he decided he had no talent at all.
And he quit?
Oh, no, it was too late. By that time, he was a big star.
Well, I still have confidence in you, Danny. There's a part in my next picture that I'd like to see you get. Did you ever play the part of a gay deceiver?
A what?
A gay deceiver. You know, a man who leads a woman on and leaves her in the dark.
Oh, that's an usher.
Danny, I never saw a mind work as peculiarly as yours.
There's nothing peculiar about it. I just say whatever comes into my head.
You have a point there.
What do you mean?
Well, I think that the theater isn't ready for you yet.
Oh, you're wrong, Don. The theater's in my blood.
You'll have to prove that to me.
Well, go on. Punch me in the nose and I'll bleed a little Shakespeare for you.
Ah, what's the use? Danny, it took me years to learn to become an actor, and I honor you by talking about something you'll never have the capacity to understand.
Oh, I appreciate it.
I'm not finished yet. If I ever again find myself discussing the theater with you, I'll punish myself by going to the darkest regions of Africa, finding the most vicious tribe of headhunters, and have them shrink my head until it's the size of yours.
Yeah, but...
Let's go, Francis.
But, Don...
That's all I have to say.
Yeah, but wait a minute, Don. How do you like that? Big shot movie star. What's so hot about being a movie star? I mean, one day you're putting your footprints in a cement to Grauman's Chinese, and the next day you're mixing it. The way he belittles me. I mean, anybody with half an eye can see I'm a greater talent than he is. Only thing is, where am I going to find somebody with half an eye? He ridicules my head. You have a point there, he says to me. I should have said there's a reason for it. When I was 6 months old, my father was hauling me upside down and dropped me into an ice cream cone, I should have said. That's why one of my eyes are red and the other one's green. Tutti frutti. You'll never get anywhere in pictures, he says to me. I should have said, oh no. When my first picture was previewed at the Fox Theater, the line stretched all the way to the Paramount, I should have said. Hey, come to think of it, that's the way they were facing. Ah, so bad. Those things happen. No, I care. I could be a bigger actor than Amici. I could even be a director or a producer. I could be the whole works. Sure, why not? It's a free country. I'm a citizen. I can just see me now running a studio. Stop the strip. Tear up the camera. You're doing everything wrong. Let's have a conference. Do you think I'm a genius, men?
Yes, yes.
I'd like to hear that once again.
Yes, yes.
Some producers hire yes men, but I'm too big for that, am I not?
Yes.
Is there any producer around who has more talent or brains than I've got?
Yes.
You're fired.
Yes.
You're hired.
Yes.
I'm tired.
Yes.
Ah, shut up. I'm Metro-Goldwyn-Thomas. I'm right there on the ball. My sagas are great epics every time. I prove that I'm emphatic in matters cinematic. I don't know what that means, but I love the rhyme. I'm Metro-Goldwyn-Thomas. I startle one and all with pictures such as no one's ever seen. I innovate new factors. I don't use talking actors. Instead, the words are printed on the screen. And when I make my western, Cassidy won't hop along. Roy Rogers will neigh while eating his hay, and the horse will sing the song. What do you know? My favorite song, Zip-a-dee-doo-dah. Metro-Goldwyn-Thomas has a million thrills in store. For instance, here's a picture that I promise I'll ignore.
Please to judge you, Anna. No, I'm putting my boy Giuseppe to jail for life as a police. Giuseppe's a good kid. Always helps his mama wash the dishes. And every night he practices on the violin and the music. The music is so pretty, like the birds are singing. Please, you, Anna. This is my only boy, and we need him to work for us in the groceries.
If he's such a good boy, why did he hijack a truck with 800 pounds of beef?
Maybe he was hungry. MGT Productions will be talked and raved about, because I take an oath that I'll include this picture out.
You better put down that gun, Lefty. You haven't got a chance. Come on down off the roof.
Yeah? Well, come and get me.
Okay, Lefty. Here I come.
I'm warning you, Steve. I'll drill you.
Remember, Lefty, I'm your brother.
You're my brother, but you're a copper, see? And I hate coppers. Now stand back or I'll drill you.
Lefty. Lefty, I tried to help you, but you turned bad. It's time you paid for it. But for Mom's sake, I'm going to let you take a couple of shots first.
Okay, you asked for it. Why don't you shoot back, copper?
I can't see you. You just shot off both my ears and my hat fell over my eyes. My next production will reveal a great surprise to you. You have my word that here's another scene I'll never do.
Nice out here on the fire escape, isn't it, Danny?
Yeah, I guess so.
Doesn't this spring night mean anything to you? Don't you know the birds are singing just for us?
Francis, when a fella makes $18 a week, he can't afford to listen to nature.
Look into my eyes and tell me that.
Stop it. Stop it, Francis. Why do you torment me like that? Don't you know how I really feel? Sometimes my lips dream that they're kissing yours. Then that nasty little voice in my head says she's pretty, Danny. And sweet and kind, why don't you buy her a diamond ring? You make $18 a week. And don't let her get down on her knees and scrub the floor till her knuckles bleed. Hire a maid, you make $18 a week. And the voice in my head chuckles. The chuckle becomes a laugh. The laugh becomes a roar and my brain explodes.
Danny, you're tearing my heart to pieces. Why do you do this to me?
Are you blind, Francis? Can't you see what I'm trying to prove?
What? What are you trying to prove?
That I'm a better actor than Amici.
Preview of scenes that you'll never see, produced by MGT.
That's the first half of The Dream Show, which includes a sketch by the Bickersons that will be in the next half of this program after the news. This is from April 20th, 1947. But right now, let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
You know, we've had quite a few people text in and say, gosh, this doesn't sound like the Bickersons. Well, let me be very clear about this. The Bickersons was a sketch that was on a half-hour variety show called The Dream Show. So what you're listening to here is The Dream Show, the whole half-hour Dream Show. It was a variety program. There was music. There was comedy. And it was really three people. It was Don Amici, Francis Langford, and Danny Thomas. Now, also in this cast, you have Carmen Dragon and his orchestra. And Gail Gordon is on this. But there is a sketch which is coming up that is called The Bickersons. And that was like the most popular part of the Dreamtime show. And when I've played Bickerson sketches for you before, it was just the sketches, not the whole half-hour variety show. Another interesting thing to point out about The Bickersons, Lisa, is it was so popular, you know, these sketches were so popular on Dreamtime that it really was the inspiration, you know, this verbal sparring of the man and woman, you know, married couple,
right.
Francis Langford and Don Amici as John and Blanche Bickerson. But really, they loved each other. They had really a great love for each other, as you'll hear in the sketch towards the end, you know. But they just spent a lot of their time arguing about something, and she was an insomniac. She kept him up. He was always trying to get some sleep. You know, he was a bowling ball salesman. He had all different kind of jobs. And she would just, he'd come home from work and he was tired, and she just was an insomniac, so she wanted to stay up and talk to him. And he was like, let me just sleep, Blanche. You know, it was great. But it was really the inspiration to Jackie Gleason to create The Honeymooners. And he's talked about it in interviews and things, talking about the fact that he liked the Bickerson so much it inspired him to create The Honeymooners. And it also was the inspiration for many other husband and wife shows on television, but the one in particular is Married with Children, and I'll tell you why. Because Philip Rapp and actually pitched the idea to Fox at the time to do something modern with the Bickersons, and even though that kind of didn't happen, a little bit later they did create Married with Children. So probably has a little bit of thanks to the Bickersons as well.
I was going to say, check out our fun fact on our Facebook page. It talks a little bit about just what you're talking about with the Bickersons and the inspiration for it.
Yeah. All right. Let's get back now. You will hear a very funny sketch of the Bickersons. Let's get back now to the Bickersons, also known as Dreamtime.
Now our lovely dream girl, Frances Langford, joins Carmen Dragon and his orchestra to sing Would You Believe Me? Now, Don Ameche and Frances Langford as John and Blanche Bickerson in The Honeymoon is Over, written by Phil Rapp. The Bickersons have retired. 3 o'clock in the morning finds Mrs. Bickerson wide awake and anxious as poor husband John, victim of a progressive insomnia or Farclay's syndrome, a condition which causes the patient to awaken abruptly every 2 or 3 days, gives audible proof of his dread affliction. Listen.
If he doesn't stop it, I'll die.
Heheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheheh
Oh, I've tried everything. I've rolled him over, I've snapped my fingers, I've uncovered his feet, he keeps right on. They say if you whistle in a monotone, maybe that'll work.
Blanche! Blanche, wake up!
What's the matter?
Turn over your side. You're whistling!
I know I'm whistling. It's the only way I can stop you from snoring.
Oh, it's just your imagination. I never snore. Go to sleep.
John, don't take it too lightly, John Vickerson. It's habits like that that wrecks more homes than drinking.
It doesn't wreck my drinking.
Nothing could wreck your drinking. Is it any wonder we can't afford even the bare necessities of life when you squander every penny on that stuff?
I never squander anything.
I was cleaning up yesterday and I found an empty bourbon bottle in the laundry hamper.
What about it?
I found another empty bottle under the icebox and two more empty bottles in the chandelier. That's where your money goes, isn't it?
It is not. I never bought an empty bottle in my life.
I worked like a slave to save a dollar. Never a word of gratitude. I spend half my life cooking your meals, and what do I get for it? Nothing.
You're lucky. I get indigestion.
That's right. Complain about my cooking.
Oh, I eat everything you give me.
You didn't touch the rhubarb pie I made.
Well, it didn't look good.
What was the matter with it?
Who ever heard of a pie 2 feet long?
Well, I couldn't get any shorter rhubarb.
I hate rhubarb anyway. I hate all desserts, and you know it. Why don't you quit wasting your time making them?
The minute I stop making desserts, you'll start asking for them. I know you, John. You're just the most contrary person
Blanche,
that ever...
Blanche, will you please stop talking?
No.
Why not?
Because if I stop talking, I'll fall asleep, and then you'll start snoring and get me up, so the only way I can get any sleep at all is to stay awake all night.
Now, go figure that one out.
Besides, I'm too sick to sleep.
Uh-oh.
I don't think I'll live through the night. I'm in such terrible pain.
What's the matter now?
I've got neuralgia or something. The pain starts in my temple and goes down my face and it jabs like a needle. Then I get dizzy and I feel as though I'm going to fade away.
You say it, but you won't do it.
Why don't you do something for me and end my misery? I told you I'm dying.
Okay, put on the lights.
The lights are on. Take off your sleep shade.
Oh. Where do you keep your stockings?
Stockings? What do you want my stockings for?
You want me to end your misery, don't you? Give me a stocking.
John, you're going to strangle me.
Oh, I'm not going to strangle you.
Then what do you want my stocking for?
I'm going to soak it in bourbon. It's the finest remedy in the world.
John Vickerson, you're not going to tie any bourbon-soaked stocking around my face.
You don't tie it, you chew it slowly. Start at the toe and gradually work your way up to the top.
Is that supposed to put me to sleep?
No, but it'll make it a pleasure to stay awake. Well, where's the bourbon?
I don't want it. I don't want you trying out those insane remedies on me.
All right, then suffer. Put out the lights.
How can anybody be so unfeeling?
Well, I'm sleepy and it's after 3 o'clock. You won't let me help you. You just want to keep me awake, don't you? Why don't you admit it?
I'm sick.
Well, chew a stocking.
You wouldn't tell Gloria Gooseby to chew a stocking.
Oh, now, don't start with Gloria Gooseby.
Believe me, that woman knows how to get sympathy and attention.
Blanche, can't I spend one day of my life without Gloria Gooseby?
Is that why you've been spending your days?
I forbid you to ever mention that woman's name again as long as you live. Do you hear me? And you know where I am every minute of my life.
What time did you get in tonight?
I got in at 2 o'clock. I went to a bachelor dinner given for your broken-down brother Amos, who's going to get married tomorrow. We went all through this when I got home, didn't we?
You didn't tell me what happened at the bachelor dinner.
Nothing happened. Just a lot of men smoking and swapping stories.
No women?
No women.
How'd you get the lipstick on your collar?
It isn't lipstick, it's blood. I cut myself shaving tonight.
You didn't shave tonight.
Well, then I cut it yesterday.
You put on a clean shirt before you left. How'd the blood get on that?
I'm a slow bleeder. Well, what are you driving at, Blanche?
Don't act so innocent. I know all about these bachelor dinners. Don't tell me there were only bachelors there.
There were all married men and only one bachelor, your brother Amos.
No women?
No women.
Hmm.
If you knew all about bachelor dinners, why didn't you make a party for him right here in your own house?
Because I'm not entertaining this season.
You're never entertaining.
Maybe I'm not. Not as much as those dancers at bachelor dinners.
Nobody danced. All we did was give a word of advice to a young man about to get married.
What was your word of advice?
Don't.
Sure. That's just like you to discourage my poor brother before he gets married. He's got a lovely girl and he's a wonderful boy.
Oh,
They'll get along beautifully. Yeah. What right did you have to discourage him?
Oh, I didn't discourage him. Everybody kidded him.
You hate being married, don't you?
No, I don't hate it.
But you don't like it.
I wouldn't say that.
Why not, John?
It'll only start another argument. Why don't you let me sleep, Blanche? I have to get up so early in the morning.
We'd be much happier if you'd talk to me more.
Ugh.
Mel Shaw tells Louise everything that happens.
Oh, what of it? I tell you lots of things that never happen at all.
You'll never convince me. You just sat around tonight smoking and telling stories.
I swear that's all there was to it, Blanche. Except after the speeches were over, Amos awarded a high silk hat to any man who could get up and say he never kissed any woman except his wife since they were married. Mel Shaw won it.
Why didn't you stand up?
Oh, Blanche, you know I look like the devil in a high hat.
I don't know, John. You're certainly not the same man I married.
Don't tell me there's a loophole.
See, that's exactly what I mean. No matter how I try to be soft and pleasant to you, you'll always say some sarcastic remark and start an argument again.
Well, I'm just sleepy.
When we were engaged, you were never sleepy. All you wanted to do was hold my hand and stare at me.
Mm.
You said I was on your mind every minute of the day and night. You couldn't think of anything but me.
Well, I married you, didn't I?
What for?
So I could forget you.
That's no lie. Here you are running off every night to smokers and bachelor dinners. Leave me here all alone with no friends.
Oh, I never leave you alone.
Let me spend the rest of my days in solitude, growing old and feeble, nobody to give me any food and no strength to walk to the kitchen.
Blanche.
Why don't you get me a wheelchair, John?
Why don't you stop getting hysterical and set aside a 10 seconds you made yourself 90 years old? You're just trying to start something again.
Nothing would ever start if you didn't snore like a steamboat.
Well, can I help it if I snore?
Yes, you can.
Oh.
Dr. Marvin says you snore on account of your windpipe.
Yeah.
You have a flaccid trachea, and when you inhale, it flutters. Why don't you let him fix it?
Okay, I'll have it fixed next week.
You say it, but you won't do it. Let him fix it now.
What?
Go on, get up and let Dr. Marvin pull out your trachea.
Are you out of your mind? Do you think I'm going to let that butcher bore holes in my throat?
He doesn't bore, he just inflates it with a needle.
I don't care if he blows it up with a bicycle pump. Nobody's going to fool around with my trachea. I never heard of such a thing.
Well, go sleep in the kitchen.
All right, I'll go sleep in the kitchen.
And on your way, I want you to send a wire to Amos and tell him marriage is good for him.
Now, wait a minute, Blanche.
I'm warning you, John. If you don't wire Amos this minute, I'll get my
things. All right, all right, all right, all right, all right. I swear you can think of more things to keep... Oh, my knee. Oh, put on the lights.
The lights are on. Take off your sleep chain.
Sending wires at 4 o'clock in the morning to... Hello, Western Union. I want to send a wire to Amos Badger. Carry United Nations Pool Hall. Yes, that's where he lives.
Make it a nice telegram.
Say, dear Amos, congratulations on your forthcoming marriage. You're doing the wise and sensible thing, and life will take on a new meaning for you. I only hope that you and your bride will be as happy as Blanche and I have been. I heartily recommend the serious step you're about to take. Just a minute. You want to add anything, Blanche? Blanche? Hello? Say, P.S. Blanche just fell asleep. Stay single, you idiot. Signed, John. Goodbye. This is Toby Reed reminding you, never before Dreen, yes, never before Dreen, could any shampoo reveal 100% of the natural luster of your hair. Listen next Sunday for another pleasant half hour with Don Ameche, Danny Thomas, Francis Langford, Carmen Dragon, and his orchestra. And now here is
Don Ameche wishing you good days, good nights, and good luck until we meet again. your dishes, and oh, how they shine. Shine without wiping in half of the time and look bright. Bright. So don't you get left, get dreft. For dishes that shine even without wiping, get Dreft, the greatest dishwashing discovery in 2,000 years. Dreft, Procter & Gamble's sudsing miracle, makes even your nicest glassware sparkle like jewels, towel or no towel. Get Dreft in the bright green package. Remember, don't you get left, get Dreft.
Danny Thomas appeared through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of The Sea of Grass. Danny Thomas's songs were written by Jerry Seelan, with special music by Carmen Dragon. Why isn't there more soap? Well, because adequate supplies of soap, fabrics, medicines, and many products can't be made without more fats than are available today. That's why everyone is urged to save every drop of kitchen fats every day. The need is urgent, the reason sound, and dealers now pay more per pound.
NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
That is the Dreen Show from April 20th, 1947, with a very funny Bickerson sketch. Don Ameche and Francis Langford, along with Danny Thomas on there. Danny Thomas, of course, went on to do his, he had his own show and did all kinds of things. And this was written by Philip Rapp. I'm very good friends with his son, Paul Rapp. In fact, we've had him on the air a couple of times here on WGN, and I license these shows from Paul, and also the Baby Snooks and Daddy shows as well. Yes?
I was going to say, I feel like the concept of the Bickersons with the snoring husband and the wife who just has more and more to say, I don't know. I think everybody can relate to that situation, most of us, for sure.
Absolutely.
And the snoring is fantastic. Wow, you're good at that, too.
Yes, Lisa. That was a recording of Lisa.
That was.
That was me sleeping on the couch in the newsroom. Thank you.
And the most important lesson that everybody should learn from listening to this Bickerson show, Roger?
Yeah.
Lisa?
Don't get married?
What? No.
Oh, Roger.
I'm joking.
I hope your wife is awake
and listening.
No, here's the most important thing you should learn out of this listening to the show. The most important thing.
Listen to your wife.
And that is, don't get left, get draft.
That's
how about,
true.
Very important.
You know what my husband says? Happy wife, happy life.
Yeah.
That's what he says.
Happy co-host, happy radio show. Yep. All right, let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Roger Badish. This is hour three of the WGN Radio Theater. It is 1:08 in the morning on Sunday morning. Happy Sunday to you, Lisa. When we come back at 11 p.m. tonight, you know what we have?
I don't, because Dan has my schedule.
Really?
That's okay. You can tell
us. I have a leg up on you then. We have Luke Slaughter of Tombstone, good Western.
Western.
And then we have a good drama on I Was a Communist for the FBI. Actually, I wasn't, but the person on the show, Matt Sabatic, was.
I was pretty clear on that.
I was a communist for the FBI. That was a really good series, too. Dana Andrews starred in that. So a couple of good dramas, a Western and then a drama for you.
Well, thanks, Carl. I'm glad you like my lineup.
I do, Lisa. And in this hour, we have Richard Diamond, private detective, one of the best detective shows, I believe, from the golden age of radio. My favorite is, of course, Boston Blackie. Mike Costello loves Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, and so do I. But I would say a close second to Boston Blackie would be Richard Diamond, Private Detective, and we have an episode for you coming up in just a few minutes. Dick Powell stars as Richard Diamond from 1952. But right now, let's play our game, Cat's Pride, Crack the Quote, and it's Donnie Darko.
Donnie Darko.
Speaking of the movie.
Drew Barrymore, she was in that.
Yeah, was she?
She was.
Jake Gyllenhaal, right?
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so Maggie Gyllenhaal.
What do they win?
They are going to win two tickets to see the Chicago premiere of Waste Watchers, which opens September 13th at the Royal George Theater.
Mm-hmm. Mm. All right. Call us now, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Play the game with us. We'll take caller four. You'll win some tickets. Call us now. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
And we have Margaret on the phone. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm just fine.
Good. Thanks for staying.
Glad to be a caller.
Oh, yeah. Glad
Hi,
you got
Margaret.
Through, and we're glad you stayed up late to listen to us. We're ready to do a little Donnie Darko.
Every weekend.
Oh.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Carl is your lifeline, and Roger's going to play with us. You ready, Roger?
I think so.
You got to listen the first time.
I know.
All right. Here we go. Number one, the end of the world is inside of you. Number two, that is when the world will end. Number three, the end of the world has been postponed.
I'll take number two.
Number two is that is when the world will end. What do you think, Roger?
I'll go with number three.
You like number three, the postponed. Mm. Carl?
This is important that I get this right.
It is.
You go three for three?
I'm going to say number one.
Number one, the end of the world. So we've got a number one, a number two, and a number three.
Yeah.
Somebody's right.
Somebody's going to win.
That's right. And I know who it is, but let's hear it.
That is when the world will end.
See, only Margaret knew the right answer.
Whoa.
So I am so happy, Margaret. You got this right.
Great job,
and I'm
Margaret.
Feeling a little giddy that Carl didn't, but I'm just saying because he'd be bragging about it all night. So congratulations
You're
to
right
you.
About that. I would have.
Oh, I know. You have won two tickets to the Chicago premiere of Waste Watchers, the musical.
It's a belly dance.
Yeah, it's definitely not a belly dance. It opens September 13th at the Royal George Theater. It is a musical. It is set in a women's gym, and it's supposed to be a hilarious and lighthearted look at four women, and they talk about food and diet and exercise and friendship. I've heard great things about it, and Royal George always does great theater. So I hope that you love the show, and let me know what you think. I'd love to hear from you.
Oh, yeah, sure. Where is that at? Downtown?
It is right across the street from Steppenwolf on Halsted.
It's a little more on the north side.
Oh, on the north side?
It's off
near,
of North
Avenue. North side, yeah.
It's off of North. It's by North and Halsted.
Oh, but when I get the tickets, though, they'll have the address and everything.
Absolutely.
On there, right?
All right. Oh, thanks, Margaret.
Terrific.
Thank you
for calling
Big
in.
Big winner. She got it right.
She did.
She got it right.
It's
Roger
Margaret.
And I.
She knows what she's doing.
Roger.
Yeah. Well, I'm 0 for 1. You're 2 for 3.
You know.
It's a lot of math.
2
there,
for 3.
Roger.
If I was a
winning record.
Baseball player, I'd be making $25 million a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
two
keep,
hits out of every three at bats.
You'd be playing left out, right?
Yes, I would be. I can't make any errors there.
That's true.
Yeah. All right. It's time now for Richard Diamond, Private Detective. This series, Roger and our listeners, was created by Blake Edwards of Pink Panther fame. He directed all the Pink Panther movies.
Mm-hmm.
And he was did all kinds of stuff. But he started in radio, and he created this series. And they hired Dick Powell to play this singing, kind of lighthearted detective. And he was great because he had just played Philip Marlowe in Murder, My Sweet in the movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the producers of this series were like, hey, let's get Dick Powell to play this part. We'll pull him right from the movie, you know, played this, you know, this detective character, and he'd be great at this as this kind of singing detective. Well, of course, Dick Powell was a great singer. He also used to whistle the opening theme to the show, which I think is amazing because whoever is doing this whistling is incredible, but it's actually Dick Powell doing it. And then Dick Powell later produced the television version. He felt he was too old to play the character in 1957 through 1960 on TV.
Mm-hmm.
So he hired David Janssen, who later, of course, star as Richard Kimball in The Fugitive. And then Virginia Gregg played Helen Asher, Richard Diamond's very wealthy, redheaded girlfriend. And then Ed Begley. Ed Begley, who, of course, his son, Ed Begley Jr., is a big, you know, actor today, played Lieutenant Walt Levinson on the show. It was originally sponsored for most of its run by Camel Cigarettes. You won't hear any of those cigarette commercials. We've edited them out. And Virginia Gregg, what else she played in the movies? She was the voice of Norma Bates in the movie Psycho. Yeah, you'll hear her on this as Helen Asher. Let's go back to March 28th, 1952. Mr. Walker's Problem is the name of this episode. Here's Dick Powell, part one of Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective. Another transcribed adventure with Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell.
Diamond Detective Agency,
Mr. Diamond speaking.
Excuse me, I must have the wrong number.
Oh, is that you, Helen?
This is me, Helen.
Oh, well, I thought maybe you might be a client. How are you, dear?
Well, I'm fine, but what's wrong with you?
Wrong?
Yes, what means it, Diamond Detective Agency, Mr. Diamond speaking? You usually come on the phone like Roy Rogers and his horse Trigger. How come no slogans?
Well, to tell you the truth, dear, I couldn't think of one this week. Anyway, aren't you the gal who's always after me to get some culture?
This is culture?
Ain't nothing else but. You just want a jaw if you got something important to talk about,
This is Friday, you know.
Happens every week.
Yes, but this is the Friday when if you haven't got a client by noon, we're going for a drive, remember?
By Jove, that's right.
Well, by Jove, it is now 11:43 and 15 seconds, approximately.
Sounds like someone gave you a new...
What does that broken sentence mean? Client walk in?
Shh, quiet. Don't talk so loud, dear. This one looks like he might scare easily. Good morning.
Good morning. Are you Mr. Diamond?
I am Mr. Diamond. Won't you come in?
Said the spider to the fly. I'll hang up, Rick. Call me back if you have time.
All right, dear. Bye.
Bye.
Well, come in, Mr.
Walker. Thomas Walker. I do hope I didn't interrupt your conversation, Mr. Diamond.
Oh, it wasn't important. Just my broker calling to tell me I've been wiped out. But enough of me, Mr. Walker. Let's talk about you.
Would it be all right if I sat down? I'm a little nervous this morning.
Well, you do seem a little worked up over something. Sure, sure. Sit down, Mr. Walker. Sit down anywhere at all.
Thank you. Are you engaged, Mr. Diamond?
Well, not yet, but she's working at it. Just between the two of us, I think if I can hold off through the month of June...
Oh, no, Mr. Diamond. I meant, are you working for anyone on a caper, I believe you call them?
Oh. No. We honest and true private detectives just call them cases. As a matter of fact, you're in luck. I am at liberty to listen to your proposal, that is... If you wish to engage me.
Good. It's taken me some time to work up enough courage to come to a private detective. I don't think I could do it again.
I don't think you could either. All right, Mr. Walker, just what is it that's troubling you?
Well, I hope, Mr. Diamond, that it's nothing more than my suspicious mind. Oh, don't misunderstand me. I'm not by nature a suspicious person, but I have stumbled across something that I think should be brought to the attention of the local authorities.
Then why not bring it to the attention of the local authorities?
Well, because I'm afraid they'll laugh at me.
So you want me to go down and let them laugh at me, huh?
Oh, no. At least not right away. Not until after you've confirmed my suspicions or proved them ridiculous. In either event, you will know then what to do.
Well, before you lose me entirely, Mr. Walker, maybe you'd better tell me just what it is you want me to do.
I think the best thing to do is... Yes, I think that would be the best. That way they would...
remember me, Mr. Walker.
Mr. Diamond, I want you to follow someone. Shadow him is a word I believe you use.
Shadow?
Yes, you do that type of work, don't you?
Oh, occasionally, yeah. Just who is it you want me to shadow, Mr. Walker?
Carter, I believe his name is. Joseph Carter. He must be the ringleader.
Oh? This Joseph Carter leads a ring?
Well, as I said, Mr. Diamond, these are only my suspicions. If you're going to laugh at me,
Now, take it easy, Mr. Walker. I'm just trying to get as much information from you as I can. Who is this Carter fellow, and where can I get in touch with him?
He's a chemist. At least he's supposed to be. And I don't want you to get in touch with him, Mr. Diamond. I just want you to follow him. It could be disastrous if you spoke to him about my suspicions.
Mr. Walker, you may not believe this, but I don't even know yet what your suspicions are.
And I think it would be best if I didn't tell you.
Oh.
That way you can form your own opinions about what is going on.
Mr. Walker, this is getting tougher as you go along. I don't even know where to find this Joseph Carter.
I have that all arranged, Mr. Diamond. Rather clever plan, too, if I do say so myself. Uh-huh. You see, I'm meeting him for lunch, and he thinks we're going to talk about his wife.
By Jove, that is clever.
Yes, yes, isn't it? Now, after lunch, that will be around 1 o'clock, I'll drop him off on the corner of First and Elm. Do you know where that is?
Uh-huh.
Good. Now, my car is a blue Essex sedan. When you see it pull around the corner, you be prepared to follow whoever steps out.
Oh, gosh, I haven't done this since the correspondence school sent me my diploma. All right, Mr. Walker, what happens then?
Then, Mr. Diamond, you stay with him night and day. You do have operators who work in shifts, don't you?
Oh, sure.
Oh, good, good. Now, the important thing is to impress upon your men the seriousness of what they're doing. Under no condition are they to let him out of their sight.
Oh, that's a cinch. Couldn't you give us something a little harder, like following four people at the same time?
Well, no. No, one of them might get suspicious, Mr. Diamond, and that wouldn't do. Now, about your money.
Oh, yes, by all means. My fee is $100 a day in expenses, Mr. Walker. And believe me, you're going to have some...
$100? Isn't that a little steep?
It's too much, Mr. Walker?
Well, no, I suppose not. I'll have to write you out a check. Will $300 be enough? That'll pay you up till Monday.
Well, yes.
By then, you will have cracked this thing. Or... written me off as a suspicious old fool.
Now, Mr. Walker, think how few private detectives there would be if no one listened to their client's suspicions.
There you are, Mr. Diamond. Yes. And here is my card. Both my business and home phone numbers are on it.
Oh, fine. All right, thank you. Walker Plumbing Company? You, Mr. Walker, are a plumber?
Yes. It is surprising, isn't it?
I smiled at him as he went out and then called Helen and broke the sad news. She pouted a little, I cooed a little, and then we both hung up feeling very good inside. I had an hour to kill, so I decided to get a little fresh air. I was half a block from my office building when a whole ounce of imported perfume floated out of a doorway. It circled around a while and finally settled over my eyes. What I could see through the haze would have caused any airline pilot to come in for an emergency landing. And even though I don't fly myself, I put the flaps down and kind of slowed up a little.
Why, Mr. Diamond, I do believe you're staring.
Oh, sorry. Do I know you, please?
No, Mr. Diamond, it isn't that good. Of course you know me.
Oh, I do, huh? Oh, sure, I remember now. Monte Carlo, wasn't it? Only you were a blonde then, with the moonlight behind you, making a halo for your lovely head, and I'm just ad-libbing, so get me out of this. Who are you, lady?
Sandra Browning. And it wasn't Monte Carlo. Come on, I'll buy you a drink and refresh your memory.
All right. But I hope we can cover everything in an hour. There's quite a bit of you to cover, isn't there?
Heaps. Much too much to run through in an hour. You're working on a case, then?
Ah, the luck of Ricky Diamond. Yes, Miss Browning, I am in the midst of what my client calls a caper. Go on the payroll at 1 o'clock.
I see. And, just who is your client, Ricky?
We were going to talk about you, remember?
Oh, but I'm so dull, Mr. Diamond, and you're so fascinating.
True, yes.
This place look all right?
Fine.
Intimate, isn't it, Mr. Diamond?
No. Say, just how well do we know each other?
Can't you tell?
Honey, right now I probably couldn't even tell you my name. And, I'm beginning to need that drink more and more. Shall we go mingle with those strangers, stranger? As we walked over to a table, I shook my head a few times to clear it and get out of the danger zone of the perfume. I knew I'd never seen Miss Browning before. No, not that I've led a sheltered life, but something like her only happens once, and it usually costs an awful lot of money. Money I've never had. So, naturally, the same applied to Miss Browning. So, with renewed vigor and a firm grip on my wallet, I sat down beside her.
Cozy?
Too cozy. I'm a sort of a wide-open spaces man myself, and I... Oh, a couple of martinis. George?
George.
Mm. Now, about you, Miss B. Where was it our paths first crossed?
No, Mr. D, I've changed my mind. I'm going to make you guess. It'll be more fun that way.
Oh, and it'll also be a long winter. Now, if we're going to get anything accomplished, maybe you better start talking. An hour goes pretty fast.
What happens in an hour that's so terribly important, Mr. Diamond?
A guess.
I don't want a guess. I want you to tell me.
You know, we may run out of things to talk about in a minute now.
Not if you tell me what I want to know.
Mm-mm.
All right, I'll take a guess. Does this case have anything to do with, say, a bank?
Well, you tell me. Does it have something to do with, say, a bank?
You're fighting me, Mr. Diamond.
Well, who's fighting who? All I'm trying to find out is whether...
You're going to wish, Mr. Diamond, that you had talked to me.
Well, conversation seems to have picked up a little. But we might as well save your breath, Sandra. I ain't talking and you ain't talking.
So, if you'll excuse me, I have to make a telephone call.
All of which left me with still a half hour to kill. I paid the check and then dropped by the Fifth Precinct to say hello to Walt Levinson. He was sleeping, so I tiptoed back out and headed for the corner of First and Elm. I'd been there about 5 minutes when a guy whose face looked vaguely familiar came up and said...
Excuse me, is this a bus stop?
No, but there's a cab stand a block down the street.
Oh, thanks. I might have stood here for 3 days.
How's that?
I saw you waiting around, so I figured it was a bus stop. Guess I'll have to take a cab now. Say, if you're waiting for one, maybe we can split the fare?
No, thanks. Funny. I'd swear you were hanging around the Fifth Precinct when I came up.
Oh? How long ago?
About 15 minutes.
Well, come to think of it, it's possible that you did. I went in to pay a traffic fine. Yeah.
Is that right? Speeding, was it?
Yes, as a matter of fact, it was. Those things do happen, you know.
Ah, yes, yes. Of course, the really interesting part about all this is that the Fifth Precinct doesn't accept traffic fines.
Huh?
You have to go all the way downtown to pay them.
You're kind of a smart aleck, aren't you?
Oh, yes. Life of the party. Just give me a lampshade and a bustle and I'm a...
Hey, what's the idea?
It's getting very exciting here.
It
dramatic
is.
Dramatic music.
Yeah. Ooh. Very dramatic part of the show there.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
What was this listener saying about the commercials or something?
So... I've had a couple people who are looking for purchasing radio shows that also include commercials.
Right.
On CDs.
Yeah, well.
And so we have just the place.
Yeah, they should join the Classic Radio Club. This is a new club, and we've had a lot of people signing up to this, and I really appreciate it, folks. And you're going to love this club. What happens is you go to ClassicRadioClub.com, ClassicRadioClub.com. And you will see that you join the club, and for only $4.99 plus shipping and handling, we're going to send you your very first 10-episode, 5-CD collection. So you can see the quality that you'll get every single month. Now, I am hand-selecting and hand-choosing 10 shows every single month and putting them on 5 CDs in a collector case. And these are not burned CDs. These are actually replicated CDs. They're the best quality shows out of my library of 100,000 plus episodes. They're going to be very unique shows, some never before released, some that you've never heard on the air, and maybe have not played since they originally broadcast. You're going to get episodes of The Shadow and Jack Benny, Boston Blackie, Burns and Allen, the best of the best every single month. And the first time, it's only $4.99 plus shipping and handling for the 10 shows on 5 CDs. Then every month you will get, unless you cancel, you will get another 10 shows on five CDs for $14.99. But the value of these five CDs is $39.95. So you're getting a great value. And you will never, ever receive a duplicate show because I'm keeping it in a spreadsheet and I'm making sure that we don't send, you know, suspense, sorry, wrong number, you know, twice. So you will always get 10 new shows every single month. And to learn all about it, just go to classicradioclub.com.
I was just thinking how fun it would be every month, once a month, to get this package in the mail with some new CDs that have radio shows. So every CD has two radio shows on it, five CDs, so it's 10 radio shows every month. And the next month, you automatically get another fresh batch of great radio shows handpicked by Carl with love.
Yeah.
So it seems like a great gift to yourself or to someone that you love or someone that you even like.
Yeah, you could give it to a friend. And I also write very copious notes about these shows, so you get all the kind of background information, and there's some, you know, all kinds of pertinent information about
the
shows.
And the thing about CDs is you can pass them around to your family and friends.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can share.
So I think you will absolutely love being a member of the Classic Radio Club. Just go to classicradioclub.com. All right, let's get back now to Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
A car spun around the corner just as the guy shoved me. I landed in the street, but rolled over in time to see the front door open and a body come spilling out, sliding to a stop against the curb. The guy with a phony ticket hopped on the running board, and the blue Essex sedan lost itself in the uptown traffic. Now, all I could do was sit there and look at the crumbled form lying in the gutter. Mr. Thomas Walker had given me a check for $300. That was to last until Monday. For Mr. Walker, Monday was just 2 days too many.
They abandoned the car about four blocks down the street, Rick. Too bad you didn't get a look at the guy behind the wheel.
Everything happened too fast, Walt.
Yeah. You feel all right now?
Yeah, just swell.
I guess the idea of all this is that somebody figured you and Walker knew too much.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense either, Rick. You said Walker wouldn't tell you a thing.
No, but he gave me $300. Between now and Monday, I'm going to try to earn it.
I could use the help. You got any idea who was gunning for him?
No, not exactly. But whoever it was kept pretty close tabs. He was followed to my office.
He tell you that?
Uh-uh.
Then how do you know?
Well, indirectly, a girl named Sandra Browning did. She said something else that's kind of kicking around in the back of my head, too.
Sandra Browning. That's the brunette you told me about?
Yeah, she seemed to think Walker said something to me about a bank.
But he didn't.
No, but that's what makes it so interesting. Oh, drop me off at that drugstore, will you, Walt? I want to look up a phone number.
Sandra?
Uh-uh. A fellow named Joseph Carter.
Who's he?
Supposed to be a chemist. Walker told me about him. Well, thanks for the lift, Fatty. If anything happens, I'll get in touch with you. Mr. Carter?
Oh, yes, that's right.
Well, I'm a private detective. May I come in? I'd like to talk to you.
You mean about my wife, Mr.
Diamond.
Oh.
Richard Diamond. What about your wife, Mr. Carter?
Well, nothing. I merely supposed. I mean, after all, you said you were a private detective.
Oh, yes, yes. But I don't handle divorce cases, Mr. Carter.
Oh, I see. Then what...
I just want to ask you a couple of questions about a plumber named Walker. Thomas Walker. Do you know him?
A plumber? Now, that's strange. Mr. Walker called me on the phone this morning and asked me to meet him for lunch. He said it was important to me that I be there.
Were you?
Well, yes, I was. That is, I was at the appointed place at the proper hour, but this Mr. Walker never did make an appearance.
Oh, I see. You said this Mr. Walker. Does that mean you didn't know him?
Not to my knowledge. The voice didn't register and the name wasn't familiar. This is very interesting, Mr. Diamond. Would you like some coffee? I'll ring for the house.
No, thanks. If you didn't know Walker, Mr. Carter, why did you agree to have lunch with him?
Well, for several reasons. As I told you, he said it was important to me, and since I was going to be downtown anyway...
That isn't good enough, Mr. Carter.
Well, I'm afraid I don't understand.
Thomas Walker was killed less than an hour ago. You say you were supposed to have lunch with him. That puts you in a suspicious position.
Yes, I see. So that's what this is about. How did you get my name, Mr. Diamond?
Oh, that isn't important. What I want to know is why you agreed to have lunch with someone you didn't even know.
Well, this Walker fellow, he said some things over the phone.
What kind of things?
About my wife. He said it would be to my advantage to meet him and discuss it. Under these circumstances, I had nothing to lose, so I agreed.
Under what circumstances?
Well, you see, Mr. Diamond, my wife and I are... Well, we're drifting apart.
Mm-hmm.
She's been seen with another man, a fellow named Dave Johnson.
Dave Johnson? Who's he?
Chap I sold my shop to when I retired last month. He and...
Oh, excuse me. I didn't know you had company. Oh.
Well, come in. Come in, Sandra. We were just...
No, I won't disturb you. Go right ahead.
Oh, yes. Yes, come in.
This is my wife, Sandra. Come in, dear. Come in.
I'd rather not.
Oh, it's all right. I was leaving anyway. Come right in, Mrs. Carter, isn't it?
Lieutenant Levinson.
Anything break, Fatty?
Nothing but my head. I've been doing some thinking, Rick.
Well, since you've already pulled the punchline, go ahead.
What? Oh, look, Rick, you said this Sandra Browning...
Carter. Browning's a phony.
You know, someday you're going to meet a girl that gives you a right name and you won't know how to react. That's the trouble with guys.
As soon as you have finished the discourse, Fatty, we get back to the plot. What have you been thinking?
Well, you said that this Miss Carter...
It's Mrs. Carter, Walt.
Will you stop that? I don't care if it's Mrs. Whiffenpiffle. I want to know what she said. She did say something about a bank, didn't she?
She did.
Yeah, and you said something about a guy named Joseph Carter who's a chemist.
Walt, so help me, if you tell me they're married, I'll throw this phone from here to the Fifth Precinct.
You do, and you'll never find out the startling news I'm about to unfold.
All right, unfold.
It's better. On the corner of First and Elm, on the very corner where you nearly met your demise, there is a bank.
That's very interesting.
You're done tootin'. Right next door to this bank is a small shop with a sign painted on the window. Pretty good sign, too. Somebody took a lot of pains with it.
Walt, I...
All right. Maybe it doesn't mean anything, but the sign says Carter Chemistry Corporation.
Oh, that's what you've been thinking about.
Yeah. Only now it's even more interesting because of this Sandra Browning Carter girl. It's a definite connection.
Uh-huh. With Walker, the plumber, making the connection. Well, thanks, Walt, and, bye.
Oh, hello.
Hello? I'm looking for Mr. Carter. Is he in?
Ain't nobody here but me, and I'm getting ready to leave.
Closing up a little early, aren't you? It's only 4:00. Oh, I see you're doing a little repair work in the back of the shop there.
Yeah, I had a little explosion in there a couple of days ago.
Oh, must have ripped up a little plumbing down there close to the floor.
Yeah, we're getting it fixed up. Sorry to rush you out like this, buddy, but you know how it is. Friday afternoon, weekend coming up, you know.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, when you see Mr. Carter, just tell him Horace Crutchmeyer was in to see him. He'll understand.
Horace? Well, tell you the truth, Horace, Mr. Carter don't come around here no more. He's retired. Sold out everything, lock, stock, and test tube.
Oh, is that so? Well, I'll get in touch with him at home. See you.
Yeah, see ya, Horace.
You know, this could turn out kind of silly, Rick. What if they don't show up?
Oh, they'll show, Fatty. I checked the floor plan of both buildings. Got it figured they'll break through about here.
How many of them do you think there'll be?
Just 3. If they knocked off Walker because he got suspicious, they won't cut anybody else in.
Is Carter in on this, Rick? It's his chemistry shop, isn't it?
No, not anymore. He sold out to a guy named Dave Johnson. You'll meet him as soon as they blast the ball out.
And one I'm anxious to meet is this Sandra Browning Carter. Sounds like quite a dish.
Not my type, Walt. I like him a little more tender.
What's the other guy's name, the one who shoved Walker out of the car?
Don't know yet. I met him in the shop this afternoon. Well, you'll like him, too. He's got sort of an ingrown face.
You know, you got to hand it to him, Rick. It's a pretty slick stunt they're pulling. Buying the shop next door to a bank, digging through the wall, and...
Shit. There they are, Walt. Maybe we'd better get over here.
Right.
Hey,
What did I tell you? Ever see anything so easy in your life?
Dave, does he have to keep talking? Can't you make
look, him look,
quiet?
Both of you knock it off and let's get busy, huh? We've only got till tomorrow morning.
Hit the lights, Rick. Okay.
Well.
Why, you...
Now, play it smart. We don't want to carry anyone out of here.
Oh, is this the bank you were talking about, Sandra? Still not talking, huh?
She doesn't look like much to me, Rick.
Now, Walt, don't be catty. Remember, she's been a very busy girl.
Mm-hmm. Well, now that they're broken in on this kind of work, I guess they won't mind it so much for the next few years.
But, Rick? Why did Walker want you to follow Joseph Carter? He didn't have anything to do with this, did he?
No, but Walker thought he did. He tumbled to what was going on when he went in to repair the plumbing. Naturally, he figured Carter was behind it.
Ain't I getting smarter as the months go by?
And speaking of months going by...
Yes, dear?
It will soon be June, you know.
June? Now there's a month to conjure with.
Oh, do you mean it, Rick?
Well, sure, June must be about my favorite. Let's see now. Don't I know a song with June in it?
Oh, Rick.
Let's see. June. Kind of a strange name to me, but, well, this might do it. Oh, it's a long, long while from May to December, but the days grow short when you reach September, when the autumn weather turns the leaves to flame. One hasn't got time for the waiting game. Oh, the days tumble down to a precious few. September, November, and these few precious days I'll spend with you. These precious days I'll spend with you.
Why, you faker, you. There wasn't a single June anywhere in that song.
Come to think of it, there wasn't.
You want to try again?
I guess not.
Something else you'd rather do?
Honey, what an opening that is. Come here.
Now, that's what I've been waiting for. More? More?
Honey, stop. If this keeps up, I won't be able to hold off till June.
Tonight's Adventure of Richard Diamond was written by Ty Cobb with music by Frank Worth. Virginia Gregg was heard as Helen Asher and Alan Reed as Lieutenant Walt Levinson. Others in the cast were Bob Griffin, Joyce Manners, Sidney Miller, and Jim Backus. Richard Diamond, Private Detective, is transcribed in Hollywood by Jaime Del Valle. Listen next week for another exciting adventure of Richard Diamond, starring Dick Powell.
Now stay tuned for This Is Your FBI, followed immediately by Ozzie and Harriet over most of these stations.
America is sold on the American Broadcasting Company.
That's Richard Diamond, Private Detective, March 28, 1952, Mr. Walker's Problem, starring Dick Powell, who not only sang on that show, he did all the whistling and... He starred in the episode as Dick Powell, Richard Diamond, Private Detective. And a great cast of characters in there, but there are two actors that did a lot of work outside of radio. You had Alan Reed, who was the voice of Fred Flintstone. He played Walt Levinson on the show. And then Jim Backus, he was Thurston Howell III on Gilligan's Island. He was on a ton of shows, ton of television and movies and things also. But great cast in this ABC broadcast, Richard Diamond, Private Detective. Hope you enjoyed
that. I'm just wondering if you're a good whistler, Carl. Could you have done that?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
No, no. I don't think so. No.
I'm a lousy whistler.
Are you? I mean, I can do it, but not as good as Dick Powell could.
Yeah.
I can't sing as good as he can.
Oh, I thought you could.
No.
Darn.
In the shower, though, I can.
Oh.
All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.